When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Of all the people I've spoken with on River Cafe Conversations, Norman Foster is the person I've known for the longest time. In fact, we met in 1970 when I was 22. We've been through a lot together, bonded by a love for family, adventure, architecture. Tonight, we're going to have dinner with his wonderful wife, Elena, and his son, Eduardo. But before we do, Norman and I will talk about our love for food and our love for each other.
Fantastic. Let's talk about my favorite dish.
Okay.
In my favorite restaurant with my favorite person. Okay. Pesto. It's a classic source of Liguria, where basil grows on the hills overlooking the Mediterranean under the hot sun. And the recipe is trofea with pesto, which serves six. 200 grams of fresh basil leaves, 150 grams of parmesan freshly grated, half a garlic clove peeled, 75 grams of pine nuts, 200 milliliters of extra virgin olive oil, and 300 grams of the pasta. So we put the basil leaves and the parmesan, the garlic and the pine nuts into a food processor, add the extra virgin olive oil, some sea salt and black pepper, and bind together to make a smooth paste. Bring a large pot of salted water to the boil and cook the trofea for about 10 minutes. Drain the pasta and return to the pot. Gently stir in the pesto, check the seasoning, and serve with grated parmesan. Sounds delicious.
Sounds delicious. Can I have some? Maybe. I hope it'll be on the menu tonight. So of all the recipes and all the books, what made you choose pesto?
I can't remember when I discovered pesto, but I can remember when I discovered pasta and risotto. I was a student, and I'd cycled and ended up in Milan. And I associated rice with rice pudding, which was sweet and sickly and really, for me, not very nice. And I discovered rice and pasta. And it was just a great discovery. That was a very, very long time ago.
How old were you then?
Oh, I must have been in my teens.
Yeah, really?
And
then what about when you then went to university, when you studied architecture? Tell me about that.
As a student of architecture, every vacation after really working to raise funds, I'd be traveling either to Italy, France, classical architecture, Palladio, an interest in urban spaces, particularly in Italy, but also trips to Scandinavia, discovering the work of Utzon, for example, before he won the competition for the Opera House. And always there was the constant of the food and the drink of the area. So I think they were, you know, simultaneous revelations about design, architecture, food, and really a lifestyle, I guess. The discovery of the pleasure and the luxury of dining.
Because it's so interesting. Tell me about a city that you visited where the architecture and the food. You mentioned Italy.
Italy is always fantastic. I mean, so, you know, the memories are of, you know, the places that I would measure the public spaces. So the main square, Il Campo in Siena, or the square in Verona, or the shortcut through the Galleria in Milan that connects La Scala to the cathedral. And always a kind of pavement cafe and, you know, just a great synergy of of food, of public space. I wouldn't be calling it public space then, but but it was that interest in urbanity in the city, which again I think is unusual because a school of architecture is much more about the design of individual buildings and not the infrastructure of a city, but it's the infrastructure of public spaces that makes, you know, it's, as I look out of the window here, it's your green space, which is the focus. That's much more than, you know, as a symbol of the River Cafe, than the indoor space.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, a much more powerful identity and the water. So it's this little quarter that's kind of like a city in microcosm.
Yeah. Tell me about going to Yale and meeting Richard.
Yes.
Richard Rogers, my
husband. I met Richard at a Fulbright reception, and I remember that he was heavily bandaged from a ski accident. And then the next time, of course, was the beginning of the master's class in Yale, which must have been 1961. And the school started the first day of term, and the School of Architecture closed its premises on the last day. So it was a 24-hour school, and the dean, Paul Rudolph, was quite a character and drove everybody very hard. And there were always so-called charrettes where you would burn the midnight oil. And I remember that the only place that was open all night was a cafe called My Brothers, I think it was.
And My Brothers?
Yes. And we'd be... we'd be there sometimes in the middle of the night and discovering American food like pastrami sandwiches. And then I remember it being fantastic.
But did you also, Richard often spoke about going to the Four Seasons.
Oh, yes. The Four Seasons restaurant at the base of the Seagram building, which was Mies van der Rohe's still enduring bronze early classic skyscraper. It must have been the late 1950s, I guess. And the base of that building was the restaurant that Philip Johnson and he did together with this extraordinary sculpture over the bar and originally the Rothko paintings and the pool room. Sadly, long gone, but the pool in the center, absolutely classic restaurant. I mean, breathtaking interior. And I remember a really, you know, very classic menu. And that was, I mean, to go there for a drink on an excursion to New York with Richard, with Jim Sterling, whatever. And I remember Jim surreptitiously pulling the ashtray and sliding it into his, the kind of pocket of his coat and... at the end of the drinks, when he was given the bill, the waiter said, oh, by the way, this figure here, that's the cost of the ashtray.
That's very fancy.
But that was quite a treat to...
that was a perfect melding of architecture and
an incredible,
and food.
Yes,
yeah,
incredible marriage of just a great space, amazing taste, classic furniture. I remember Philip had his office in the Seagram, and he would have his the table, you know, his regular table in the corner, and hold forth, hold court there.
Was he teaching at Yale? Did you know him?
He was a visiting critic. A great thing about Paul Rudolph, he would bring together people who would not necessarily see eye to eye with his architecture or the other way around, but consciously bringing dissent to bear on those of us who were students at that time. We were real beneficiaries of that. Yeah. I mean, it was an incredible combination because you had Paul Rudolph And for the second half, Serge Chimaev, the European-Russian sort of emigre, you had Vincent Scully as the historian, and coming at it from those different angles, we were very privileged.
And also interesting that Philip Johnson invited students, you know, to come and have lunch at the Four Seasons.
Sometimes, yes. And I remember one amazing crit, and the crit was a theatrical event when you presented your design one after the other, and you had the whole school would crowd into the room, and there was a sense of anticipation and theatre. I mean, it was a little bit like the arena, you know, with the bear pit. And I remember Richard and I did a scheme together. That was pretty controversial because it hadn't happened before, the idea of two people coming together to do a joint presentation. And in the middle of it, Philip said something like, well, this model's great, but I don't know what these buildings are doing in the middle of this spine. I really think they should come off. And he grabbed the model, he grabbed the offending buildings in the middle of this circulation spine with the ziggurats either side of it, and threw it through. And Paul Rudolph said, you're so right. I've been telling the two of them, but they never listen. And I remember saying afterwards, and actually, they were both right.
Were they right?
Yes, they were right.
Okay. Wow.
But it was theatre. Yeah, it was like a real cut and thrust and good times.
But when you think of theatre, when you go to a restaurant, do you look for the drama of a restaurant? Do you choose restaurants
I think we're attracted to being together, and in a way, the pandemic has magnified that and made us realize the privilege and the luxury of being able to come together. So it is the atmosphere of a communality, of people having a shared sense of occasion, and that can be very modest. Cafes, bistros, where you might be sitting on a bench or just under, you know, the shade of a tree. I mean, it sounds corny and romantic, but you know, genuine places.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
So early life, tell me about Manchester. Did your mother cook? Your father cook?
My mother cooked, but it was the classic baked beans on toast, or it would be fish and chips from a fish and chip shop. Mm. It would be a roast on Sundays. Sundays was a special day, and I'd go around to the corner shop to get mustard powder, and I remember making that to go with the beef. That was a special day.
Did you make it, or did your mom?
No, my mother.
Your mother did. Yeah. Was she working full time? Do you think food was something you put on the table?
Later she worked, but at that time, my father, I think. This was a time during the during the war and rationing and so on. So far, far removed.
I was saying that I talked with Paul McCartney, who probably is at the same generation, and he described growing up in Liverpool and very much the same kind of food, which is, you know, it came out of the war, it came out of poverty, it came out of isolation, as you say.
Yes, I can remember my mother discovering dried eggs, which came from America, and you whip them with this powder, this bright yellow powder, in a brown, greaseproof package. And fruit was scarce. Yeah. I mean, if you got a tangerine, that was a real treat. I mean, very, very special.
So I
remember when the after the war, when the shops opened and queues for sweets.
Yeah.
Sweets were like a rare delicacy. And I remember Hershey bars, which somehow found their way through, you know, through children and friends of GIs who were stationed nearby.
Were you hungry?
No, I don't think I never remember being hungry. No. So I think that rather like Paul that you're describing, I think one maintains an appreciation of of largesse, if you,
if you were. Because it was also out of very, you know, desperate conditions of, you know, of rationing of the war.
I remember the ration book as if it was yesterday.
What was it like?
It was coupons. It was a government document. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful image and really quite symbolic.
Yeah. And when you were growing up, were you interested, you think, even though you were deprived of the kind of exciting food from the con. Did you think about it? Did you think that food could taste better than this?
I remember a bike ride, which was, I must have been 16, and I was with a friend. And this was the first time out of Manchester. And it wasn't just out of Manchester, it was taking a train to London, crossing the Channel. And I remember the first meal in France. It was in a very humble cafe, and I remember this friend and myself automatically, as a reaction, we were served dinner and asking for the salt and pepper, because that was a ritualistic, you know, whenever food was served, you automatically sprayed it with salt and pepper. It was a, and I remember the look of absolute horror on the proprietor serving the food. We have already added the salt and pepper. And that was, interestingly, that was a turning point.
When do you think that you really discovered what food could be? On that trip, and then did you continue?
Subsequent trips. And perhaps also a taste for more exotic food, because as a student in Manchester, I remember the only affordable food, which was interesting, was Indian food. So as a student at Manchester, it was really side street Indian, again, quite humble Indian restaurants, but good food.
Would you ever go out with your parents for a meal, or was that?
Did
you
rarely. I remember going to a coffee shop in Manchester, which was called the Cardoma, and was very dark wood and kind of modernist curves. And that was a rare occasion to take a tram or a trolley bus into central Manchester. And that was a very special treat.
So that was before architecture school.
Oh, yes, that was way before. I was really
quite
young.
So you were discovering, you sought out, though, a coffee shop that was beautiful architecture.
Very, very strong and touching memories of that,
of going there. Did you go often, or was it just a special?
Once in a blue moon, as they say.
When you couldn't eat out or afford restaurants and you wanted to eat as a student, did you learn to cook? Did you decide, if I can't afford to eat out, I'm going to try to eat?
No, I mean, Elena will reminisce about the only time that I made a meal was spaghetti and pesto. But I think that was such an exception that it's been imprinted on her memory.
But I remember, and I was so happy when you chose Pesto, because I do remember, and it probably was, it was at Compton Bassett.
Out in Wiltshire.
And so what did that have been in the early
80s? With the aga in the kitchen.
Yes,
And I remember you saying, I counted the leaves.
Yes, I came down and I said, Norman, what are you doing? And you were going 97, 98, 99, and 100. And he said, well, I found a recipe that requires, sort of 20 basil leaves for pesto, but we're 8 people, so I have to count out 160 leaves of basil. I said, okay, we also could possibly weigh 10 leaves and then multiply it. But we sat there, and the two of us, and I thought, this is a man who really cares about, the end result.
Trying to get it right.
Getting it right. And then I remember once also in your house in the penthouse and overlooking the river, we were talking about, I think you were helping me with how to design the River Cafe cookbook. And I came over to see you and we were talking about it. And then we decided to cook a recipe together. And I could really see you in the kitchen. I wonder why you don't cook more.
Maybe that's another life still to
maybe.
Come. Live in hope.
A lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Very often they'll say that a city has a great food culture, and that's because a lot of restaurants have just opened and there's a lot of young chefs working there and people are going to restaurants. But I think that, and I wonder if you agree, that if you go to a city like Paris or you go to Milan, the taxi driver can tell you how to cook a sea bass, and the boulangerie will not sell bread after 11 o'clock for lunch, and then you have to go back at 4 for dinner. And that seems like a deep culture of food.
And there are wonderful places in Spain where food is really a cult, and it's a very male occupation.
Tell me about that. What do you mean?
I'm just thinking of parts of northern Spain where that gastronomic tradition really permeates society, and everybody is, lives it as a way of life. But you're absolutely right about the taxi driver, and I always remember you anecdotally told me about a taxi driver in Paris where he was saying, something like, I live to eat.
Yeah,
I always remember your quotation on that.
I think you do. And I think when you're in St. Moritz, when you're in Martha's Vineyard, when you're in Madrid, do you always have the food of that culture?
Absolutely. Yes. I think we enjoy the differences. We enjoy the what is special about a location, a place, a quarter in a city or a street or a particular shop or a speciality. I think that becomes increasingly more significant as the world gets flatter and more uniform.
Yeah.
So I think that pursuit of the local is more and more special.
And when you know that you're going to Madrid, what are you excited about eating in Madrid?
In Madrid, it is the total change of tempo and work pattern. So I enjoy that shift where the working day is longer and later, and the restaurant is, well, 9 o'clock is early. I mean, you're lucky if the restaurant is open at that time. So, so everything is later, and I enjoy that change of pace.
And they wake up in time to go to work. That's what I'm really in awe of, that you can eat out at midnight and still get up and go to the office. But when you travel, and you do travel, you often fly your own plane, don't you? You fly, and you've been a pilot. Again, your adventure. I remember having a friend in those days that was actually flying planes. It was so exciting.
I remember we flew to various places
We did. We flew
to
America,
to the south of France.
When
I flew a twin-piston Navajo, I remember.
We did. So when you're flying a plane, do you eat while you're in the cockpit, or do you eat before you go, or do, I guess it depends on the length of the flight, but do you eat a certain diet, to certain types of food to be alert?
It's not that long ago that was a lifestyle, but that's changed as flights have got longer, and I've tended to take a back seat in the cabin, when I was immersed in that world, I just, as I do now, as we move as a family, just automatically go into the time zone that we're flying into. So, you know, if we arrive at dinner time, it's dinner time. We might have been through five or six or more hour time change. But so just going immediately into the tempo of the place that you're, you know, arriving at, I think that's also a way of life.
And you're an athlete. When you compete in the marathon, skiing or biking, do you have a diet that you adhere to? Do you have a certain
Just enjoy everything. Sometimes to excess.
That's good. Okay, so my last question: if food is, you know, something that you've, it's an adventure, if it's family, if it's a connection, which you and I certainly have had, food is also comfort. What would be your comfort food?
I think it's where we started. I think it's pasta and pesto.
Thank you, Norman.
With good cheese.
Well, good cheese.
And wine.
Good cheese. Oh, not wine. Pasta, pesto, cheese, and wine.
Sounds good. And friendship.
Thank you, Norman.
Thank you.
To visit the online shop of The River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.